Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
Hi, and I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program here in Kentucky. Laura, we're both finally healthy on the same Thursday.
Can you believe it? It's been a few weeks since we've had a show due to illness, so we're glad to be back, and we have an exciting show. I don't know if exciting is the proper adjective. I feel like I'm kind of rushing to get here, so we've been meaning to do this letter for a couple of weeks, and so I hope that the mom that sent us this letter said she didn't want to call in because she, for whatever reason, so I hope that she actually finds the show and gets to listen to it because she's been wanting us to talk about this for a couple of weeks, and we had planned to do it. When's the last time we even had a show? 3 weeks ago?
I think 3 weeks, yep.
And we didn't get to do it that day because we ran long on the first letter. Imagine that. And so today we're going to start with this letter and hopefully get through it. It's going to be a little difficult to take callers today because I'm not in my office where I normally am where I do the show from, so calls would be really difficult today. So if you have a question, please email me at laura@teachmetotalk.com and we'll try to schedule to have you on next week or the next. And I think that's all I'm excited about that. And I think, Kate, you're going to read the letter for us. And
I get to do the honors today. Okay, this is an email. I guess you received it January 20th, it looks like. It says, well, my son is 3.5 and currently attends preschool 3 days a week, 5 hours a day. This has, in bold letters, tremendously helped his speech. We had him evaluated by speech therapist at 2 years old and last September of 2009. So I don't know how old he was then, maybe 3. Both times, although he was on the very low end of the scale, he did not qualify for speech therapy. But he's now 3.5, and I'm beginning to think there may be a bigger problem. Here are some examples. He will not answer questions. He sometimes answers with yes or no, but not as the right answer. More of just as his knowing, thinking, memorization of yes or no being an answer to a question. If I ask his name, he will sometimes answer, I'm Jeff.
Hold on a second. Don't say his name because I don't think the mom. I think she's
okay. He will sometimes.
Sorry, I should have told you that ahead.
Okay. If I ask him his name, he will sometimes answer, let's say, I'm Jacob French. Jacob French. So he sounds like he will attempt to give his name. I've explained what first name and last name is, but he will not respond. I guess she is kind of adding on here. He will not or doesn't understand if I ask him. If I say, what's your first name, he says, I'm Jacob Frost. He cannot answer whether he's a boy or a girl, no matter how much I try to work with him. Same thing goes with how old he is. He talks very well, but most of what he says is almost like he has a word bank of phrases and sentences he's heard us say, and when he wants to say something, it's usually a repeat of something we've said before. If he finishes his popsicle before his sister and I do, he always says, I finished my popsicle too, which is what I say after they finish theirs. Today I met with his preschool teacher, and she said there are some red flags she has noticed. She said she thinks he could be autistic, but then he does things that make her think he's not. Some examples from school. He doesn't engage in circle time. They are learning to sign the Jesus Love Me song or, you know, prayer. Although my son will sit there the whole time, he just looks sideways out of his eyes and stares out of the window. When circle time is up, she holds up the first letter of each child's name. Before the child can get up to play, the child must identify and say the first letter of their name. When it's Jacob's turn, she holds up the letter and asks him, what letter is this? Silence. It doesn't sound like he knows to respond. Every day they say what day it is and what the weather is like and have each child describe it themselves. My son only repeats, never says anything original. She says, it's sunny outside. He says, yes, sunny outside. Today, she said, eating healthy and exercising will make us strong. Then each child took turns answering as she asked, what two things will make you strong? Each child said the two things, but my son said, yes, strong. You can count to 20. Do you want me to go finish this whole thing?
I don't know. What do you think? You want to back up and just kind of start talking about things from the beginning, and then we'll get to those other little things.
Okay.
I mean, what do you think? You want to keep reading?
Well, we're probably going to have to pick through it anyway. Why don't I just read it once, and then we'll kind of pick through it?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. He can count to 20, she said, but cannot count objects to 10 or 20. Like if she asks him to count 5 apples on the table, he won't do it. He also gets very excited and will jump around hyper and gets really riled up and throws things. He also has no concept of the rules. He will dump out a bucket of toys and then just walk over them and not even notice. He also can only scribble. They're learning to write letters, and he still cannot even draw a straight line or a circle. It's very hard to get him to stay engaged in projects. She has to stay next to him and keep encouraging him. Same thing goes at home. Thanks for all your insight you can give me. I'm looking for a developmental pediatrician in my area to have him evaluated. But any help or advice you can show, I don't know if that's what it says exactly, it's a typo, you can let me know would be greatly appreciated. Also, he has trouble using his...
Does she mean hands there?
Oh, maybe it is. Hands, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has an awkward wave goodbye and has trouble pointing, holding up one, two, or three fingers. It's like they are stuck together with glue. His teacher said he has trouble with finger play at school. Okay, we do have a whole list of things that he's exhibiting.
A whole
list.
Yeah. Let's go back to her first point about, boy, this mom has really tried because she knows something is not quite typical in his development because she's had him, she's had two different speech evaluations,
mm-hmm.
and both of them have said he's on the low end of the scale, but he didn't qualify for speech therapy. And let's just pause and talk about the difference between typically developing language and normal and low end of normal versus how delayed a kid has to be or specific eligibility requirements for a program. I think parents miss this all the time, don't you, Kate? Where they're not, they get an initial evaluation by their state's early intervention program or from the school system, and they say they don't qualify for therapy through our program. But a parent can misinterpret that as everything is normal. And usually there's a kind of a gray area between children who are doing well and who we would consider typical and kind of normal development, and then those kids, you know, you do have, when you look at the bell curve, you do have some kids that are kind of under that. They're not doing well, but they're kind of keeping up and they're learning, but they're not the superstars in the class, and that's okay because there is a big range of normal. But then you have some kids that really fall in that gray area between kind of low end of normal and qualify for services. And even though they are still technically behind, they're not delayed enough to meet the 1.5 standard deviations or 2 standard deviations below normal on a standardized test. And that's what I think sometimes parents miss that a therapist is saying to them. They might not be saying, your kid's doing great, he's totally normal. They're just saying he doesn't qualify for services, and there needs to be, but he doesn't qualify for our program, but he's still not where his same age peers are.
Right.
And I
know that states even vary by early intervention programs. Some states have, how would you put it, a higher standard to qualify, so kids have to be more delayed in, say, Illinois than they do in Indiana. And it's just kind of on a state basis they determine, we think that kids functioning at whatever level should qualify for services, whether it be PT or OT or speech or DI, whatever it is. And in the next state, a child might have to be significantly more delayed to qualify. So I don't even know where this mom comes from. But it could be that her child who didn't qualify in her state may have qualified in a neighboring state. So it's kind of random as to which states determine what level. There's always a delay, but it might have to be a more significant delay in a neighboring state, and that's just how they set their criterion and where what population they choose to serve, really.
Right. And remember last year when we did that show on testing and kind of eligibility requirements and just how delayed you had to be, you had to get in a preschool, public preschool program in Kentucky or qualify for speech in Kentucky. Remember I looked at that, and you had to be a full year behind. So you
right.
had to be a three-year-old, 3 years, 0 months kid to functioning like a two-year, 0 months kid before you qualified. So a mom might go in and her kid might score at 2 years, 4 months, and she, you know, with a whole almost year behind still, you know, 8 months behind or whatever, a pretty significant delay, I think, but still be told he's not eligible for services and misinterpret that as he doesn't need it.
Everything's
so
fine,
big,
right.
Yeah, there's a big difference between that. So as a parent, if you do have one of those borderline kids, and I know that we have parents like that that listen to this show because they'll say, you know, you're the only therapy, you and Kate are the only therapist that I get any input from because my child isn't getting speech right now. That might be one of the things that you want to really take your child's test scores out and look at. You know, what did it really say? Did it give me an age equivalency here? And I think parents understand age equivalencies much easier than they understand the standard deviation. I'm so sorry. I guess
you know what? I understand age equivalencies much better. I mean, I get the math behind it, but to me it's much more significant to say, oh, you mean my child who's exactly three is functioning where an average two-year-old functions? That means something to me. It's a lot more tangible and concrete. Mm-hmm. Then, it's 1.5 standard deviations or it's two standard deviations. You know, to me that's it's math, and it doesn't really mean all that much. Some therapists don't like to give those age equivalencies, but I think parents, and even for myself, I think they mean more. So,
I think so, too. And so I think that's the first thing that's happened, is that he probably did need some services all along. Even though she says now, looking at this more carefully, she says he's on the very low end of the scale. And there is a full range of what we consider to be typically developing. And there, again, not every kid is going to blow a test away and do, you know, even kids who've had no problems might not do every single thing, you know. So that's not a big deal to be on the low end of average, but you just need to understand what the test results are so that if you don't qualify for a particular program, that you know, okay, I need to try to get him qualified somewhere else or use my insurance to go to a private agency or something like that, not just everything's okay, he doesn't need speech.
And let's say also, Laura, let me say, we've talked some, you know, we tend to revisit the same topics repeatedly, but one of them is these are kids, and why I say I'm thinking of this child as a child who was probably verbal both times he was evaluated through the early intervention program. And sometimes we see these kids, whether it be slipping through the cracks in early intervention or they slip through the cracks with the preschool system, because when a child is verbal, I think sometimes therapists kind of erroneously make some assumptions like, oh, he's talking, he undoubtedly gets this, you know what I mean? They don't necessarily really, really look at what does this child really understand, what happens if I change the variables a little bit on him, because if this was a kid who had memorized some things, just like it sounds like he's doing at you know, his current age of 3.5, he could very easily, I'm not saying they didn't know what they were doing, but I'm just saying these kids are easy to miss, you know, when they're really talking, but yet when you really spend time with them and you really, really analyze what is he really understanding, is he just giving me back the cow says moo, or can I ask him a novel question and I get some sort of a reasonable response? So
right.
These are kids that are easily missed by all of us, really.
I think so, too. And the other thing she said, you know, is that he does talk.
Mm-hmm.
He does. He's memorized some things, and she was so observant when she said, it seems like most of what he says, he has a word bank of phrases and sentences that he's heard somebody else say, and then he uses that in kind of a related situation. So when they're eating popsicles, even if he finishes first, he says, I finished my popsicle too.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird to say if you're first, but not so out of the ordinary if you say it when somebody else has said, I finished my popsicle. So it is really easy to kind of miss those little things that are a little bit quirky, and you think, well, that kind of fits. But unless you have that prior knowledge that the mom, and usually kids that are like this, they'll say it in the same intonation, the
right.
same exact rhythm that they've heard somebody else say it. And, you know, I've had been in assessments and things for some, a little girl that I'm thinking of that I saw several years ago. You know, when I first got there and said hi to her, she started singing Happy Birthday to me, you know, which was, again, a little odd. You think, okay, I'm coming in and greeting her. But to somebody who's thinking, gosh, she's verbal, she's sang that whole song, and I understood every single word she said, you know, without looking at the context of you really shouldn't be singing happy birthday when somebody first gets to your house. That's not a typical greeting, and especially, you know, you're not going to a birthday party unless you really are analyzing how they communicate or the pragmatics of it. You know, you really can miss a lot, too. And I think when I started talking about this, I was going to say that he, for lack of a better word, sounds echolalic. He's just lifted these phrases and sentences, again, from situations that he's heard before and is using them kind of in a related way, excuse me, within the context of a conversation. So we know that, one, he talks, but, two, he's having some difficulty processing and truly kind of understanding what's an appropriate response. And she said up in the paragraph about his name that he can say, I'm, you know, the first name, last name, but he doesn't exactly know when to use that response or when that might be appropriate. And she's tried the whole first name, last name thing, and he says the same little thing every time because he's learned that little phrase. And echolalia is associated with autism spectrum disorder. Just because a kid is echolalic and that's the only thing they have doesn't necessarily mean that he's autistic. But I do think that I agree with this mom that she should go ahead and pursue that testing with the developmental pediatrician based on the recommendation of her preschool teacher, because there are quite a lot of little red flags that she's noticed here.
Right.
And again, let me say, we can't see him. We don't know. We're not saying, oh, yes, we're giving our diagnostic impression right here over the phone. We would never do that. We're just telling the mom, yeah, there are some things I would be concerned about with these behaviors, too. And I think that's a good idea to go ahead and follow through with some more specific testing.
Yeah, I would say definitely there are some things, you know, that learning scripts for things is what I always call them when she says he associates them with certain situations. And I've certainly had quite a few script kids. If it's the same situation, they give you the same phrase, but if you vary it, sometimes they only learn that phrase or the meaning of those words in that one very specific instance, and when you vary that at all, and that's what I mean about these kids being easy to miss, because, gee, if you happen to play their little game and what they're frozen, their script makes sense, you think, oh, that was right on, but then you change the situation at all, and their script doesn't quite make sense anymore. So,
you know, and usually kids will, parents or grandparents or other people will say, what's your name and how old are you?
Mm-hmm.
So if a kid learns, I'm, you know, Macy Myers, and then I'm two, those things. But if you ask the age first and they blurt out, I'm Macy Myers, you know, then you know, okay, they're just kind of quoting back that thing. Or haven't you had kids, Kate, in the past that their parents have kind of overworked on colors, so no matter what you ask them about
mm-hmm.
an object, they blurt out the color. You know,
oh,
like,
yeah.
Hey,
what is it? Red! You know?
He says, oh.
Red what?
You know.
Red! Yeah.
Yeah, I'm only learned to identify the color with that. I have known nothing about saying the object name. So, again, that lets you know that a child is having processing problems, auditory processing problems. I think about it with toddlers as plain old receptive language problems or comprehension problems, they don't really understand the question, because if they understood the question, they would give you the correct answer. So that's kind of how you need to look at that, is there's a receptive language problem too, or an underlying auditory processing problem. And boy, I've talked myself in circles before trying to explain the difference between comprehension issues versus processing issues. And in a toddler, they look the same, don't you think, Kate? It's too hard to tease that out in a 2 or 3 year old. So I don't even think you should really bother.
I'm not knowledgeable enough to make a distinction. I kind of think of them interchangeably, and that may be inaccurate for the kids we see, but I think it probably is inaccurate as kids get older. For to me, like you said, they look pretty much the same. You're trying to ask them questions. You're trying to see if they're following what you're saying, and you see that, gee, they do have some kind of rote information in their heads, but they don't necessarily respond to what you're saying to them. They just give you their one little answer.
Yeah.
And let's just say these things that she said, her little boy is 3 and a half, and she talked about he doesn't know his first and last name, although he knows them together, but he doesn't seem to understand that first and last name thing. He also struggles to get whether he's a boy or a girl. What else did she put in that first? I guess those were the main points. And those things,
you can't answer his age.
Right. How old is he? And by 3 and a half, yes, kids should know all those pretty automatically.
Yeah, that's on my test, the Rossetti Infant Language Scale, that I really kind of use as the chief reference for milestones for kids. That's on my test at 33 to 36 months.
Mm-hmm.
So by 3, and certainly by 3 and a half, those should be things that aren't even a struggle for him anymore. And truth be told, kids with typically developing language are doing that by about 2 and a half pretty consistently and not messing those up. Even if you try to trick them and say your questions out of order, they understand the question. They understand what answer goes with what question. So they're not having those processing problems, you know, even by 2, 2 and a half. So to still be 3 and a half and be struggling with that, that's a big indicator that he's not processing language like he should.
Right. And it sounds like this mom, because she's so aware of it and has had these ongoing concerns, has worked a lot on trying to get, you know, she didn't just casually ask him one day and realize he didn't get these. These are things that she's really tried to help him on and talk about and help him to learn, and he still really doesn't understand them.
Right. Okay. So let's keep going with these really specific things, and these were the characteristics that the preschool teacher noted with her in the conference that lead her to believe that he at least needs to be referred and have autism spectrum disorders ruled out. And since this is your first time to listen to the show or you're not really familiar with what that means, you know, autism is, we say, a spectrum disorder, meaning that you can have a very mildly impaired child who really is doing okay but just has some little areas that he struggles with, you know, socially or with language or whatever. He might not have kind of the characteristic idiosyncratic behaviors, where he might not be a kid who has to spin all the time or flap his arms or anything like that. The full range to the child that, you know, we thought about as children with autism, you know, that you really had to be more severe and not be completely nonverbal and never make eye contact and never have any episodes of joy or any kind of connectedness with your parents. And so that whole range from someone who, or a child who might be pretty functional and just have these sort of quirky things versus a kid who is really, who would be easily identified, like in the grocery store, you would see them and think, oh gosh, there's something up with that kid. There's something going on with him. So there's this whole range. And it sounds like some people get really offended. It's not the right word, Kate, but they get really upset when they think children are over-identified or over, you know, oh, you're saying any kid with kind of one or two of these little quirky things is autistic, you know. And we're just saying, when we use that term, we look at the whole broad range of disorders from the children who are really non-functional and really, really, really struggling to children, again, who look okay in certain circumstances. So,
And certainly there has been a trend in recent years to move towards a broader definition of the spectrum, and sometimes people only have kind of a, you know, a more traditional, somewhat outdated idea of what autism looks like, because really there are more and more kids being diagnosed, but then they also, there's a movement towards a much broader definition, so kids are, in general, you know, they're functioning, they're mainstreamed in your average classrooms, they're verbal, they're, you know, so it is confusing. I always say, autism is a very gray area. It is. I mean, they're just, it's, there's no really one medical test they can run. They administer a series of psychological tests. Typically, it is a child psychologist who makes the diagnosis. And even among child psychologists, there's some variability as to who gets diagnosis and who doesn't. But, you know, we can say...
I mean, you have really, with the our lead agency with diagnosis, you know, I think that there are children, or I know that there are children at two that they say, no, he's not on the spectrum, and then those same parents call me when those kids are four or five, and they're getting the spectrum diagnosis when mm-hmm. they're older, and they, you know, and they feel betrayed. Because they feel like, gosh, at two, they said he's not autistic. And I know that every therapist that saw him in my house that was on our team said, yeah, he was. But then we took him, and that doctor said, no, he wasn't. And so we didn't think he was. And then now he's in school, and they said, yes, he's autistic. So what happened, Laura? Did he just get autism between age two and age five when he has the diagnosis? And my answer to that is always, he must not have met that whatever criteria that your initial evaluator was using. You know, they were pretty, you know, not as, I can't find the right word, they just weren't as broad with that definition as your person is now. And so, you know, I think that happens a lot, and parents think, or it certainly has the children on my caseload, you know, think, gosh, we're out of the woods, and they kind of do a big whew, and then they realize later down the road, oh no, there really is still an issue here. And I do think it makes parents uncomfortable with that, and they do feel like, gosh, you know, I got ripped off. I really wish that they would have told me. But what you just said is what's happened is, you know, it's not an objective test. It's very subjective. It's, you can't run an X-ray or an MRI and tell. You can't do a blood test. It's all yes or no, looking at this specific set of criteria, and some people see the glass half full, and some people see it half empty, which we talk about all the time with kids. So, you know,
and I totally get why parents make a huge distinction between he is autistic, he isn't autistic, or she isn't. But see, in our world, I think because we deal with kids on the spectrum a lot, and oh, probably it's easier to be a little less sensitive and a little more detached about it, but.
Right.
In my way, you know, by my way of thinking, I think sometimes it doesn't necessarily matter. I mean, I get that it's a huge weight to bear for any family to absorb, oh my gosh, my child could be or is autistic. But in my thinking, I think, well, it's you're really talking about a specific set of behaviors or delays, and whether or not this child meets the criterion or doesn't change those specific behaviors or delays or concerns. And so I kind of try and focus on those, like what are the issues for this child, whether he is autistic or he isn't, you know.
Right. And that's what we look at when we're working with a kid. We're looking at, you know, specifically what strategies can we put in place, you know, what treatments are we going to recommend that address those things that he can't do to get him to the point that he uses language, to get him to the point where he understands what things words mean so that he can follow directions, to the point where he enjoys a little social game like Ride a Little Horsey with Mommy. You know, so those are the things we're working on. And to me, it really, it doesn't change my approach when a kid gets a diagnosis or doesn't get a diagnosis. And I think that's what you're saying, too.
Right.
And we are a little more detached, for lack of a better word. One, because it's not our children, you know, getting that diagnosis. But two, it doesn't really change to say he does, you know, he's on the spectrum or he's not on the spectrum. It doesn't really matter because we're going to do the same things regardless. And so,
well, and like you said, I think sometimes parents think, oh, they said he's not autistic. Everything's fine.
And when we're still going, no, he still doesn't process language.
The same issues that were true yesterday are still true today. And conversely, when a child, when a child does get a diagnosis of being on the spectrum, being autistic, parents can be devastated, and yet I do say he still has the same strengths he had yesterday. He's still a darling little boy who really likes to play, who blah, blah, blah. I mean, so it doesn't, but people see that as a very black and white thing, and it just isn't anymore. I mean, it's just so darn gray that it's hard to talk about sometimes, but anyway, shall we get back to this little fella?
Yes, and some things that the mom talked about, some specific things. He didn't engage in circle time. They're learning to sign a little song. Although she says her son sits there the whole time, he doesn't participate. He's just looking sideways out of his eyes and staring out the window. Okay, that to me is a couple of different issues. First of all, the language level is probably way above where he's actually able to understand and follow those directions. Two, that song, the person leading it, the teacher or the kids or whoever, it's not exciting enough for him, so there's no incentive for him to want to participate. It just sounds like wah, 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 wah. There's nothing to pull him into that situation. It is great that he's compliant and sits there the whole time, because haven't we had children, Kate, who are in a situation like this and they're not sitting still for 1 minute?
No, circle time means it's time to run. He has learned to sit there, which is definitely to his credit. I'm sure the teacher appreciates that.
It is. And that looking sideways out of his eyes, that's a sensory processing difference, and an occupational therapist, which every one of these other remaining things that we're going to talk about, an OT would help this mom address. And that was the original response that I sent back to this mom, is you need to get an occupational therapy evaluation. Because so many of these things that she lists as concerns by this preschool teacher really could be explained by looking at him from a sensory processing perspective or an OT perspective. And so we're going to talk about that. But that looking sideways out of your eyes when kids do that. And Kate, you jump in if you have a different opinion about this and talk about what you think it is. But they really are kind of seeking extra visual stimulation. And so they, look out of the corners of their eyes. Or a lot of times you'll see kids doing that when they're going to run. They don't look straight ahead, and then they run right smack into the couch or the wall or whatever because they're so busy looking sideways, because they're seeing all those little images fly by as they run really fast, and that, is exciting to them. A little, we call it STEMI, or, a little visual stimulation. They're getting a little woohoo from seeing it that way. So because he's bored and sitting there and that language doesn't mean anything to him, he's thinking, what else can I do here that I'm not going to get in trouble for? Hey, how about I cut my eyes around to the side and see how it looks this way and how it looks that way? And that's what it sounds like to me that he's doing.
I totally agree with that. This is also a little boy, and I obviously don't know him, but it sure wouldn't surprise me to see him laying on his belly watching cars or choo-choos as he pushes them back and forth, back and forth. Some kids, and typically I'm going to say straightforwardly that typically it is kids on the spectrum, but certainly more encompassing would be kids who have sensory processing differences. They like that alternative visual thing they get from that, and I don't exactly get it, except to say that we see that type of behavior pretty consistently or on a fairly regular basis with kids with sensory stuff. They like to do things different. They also avoid direct eye contact. She doesn't really ever say anything about his eye contact, but I would not be surprised if, left to his own devices, this little boy liked to lay on the floor and wheel cars back and forth and get, again, they're getting that funky visual kickback. And I don't get why that's fulfilling or some sort of comfort or some sort of buzz almost that they get from it. All I see is that kids who have these sensory things tend to seek that alternative visual. I don't know what it is.
I mean, we say stimmy. That's not a professional term. Please don't email me about that, how you hate that word. But, you know, that's what it is. It's the same as kids that, like, slap their hands. They like how those little, how their little hands feel, or, like, looking at their hands go really, really fast. You know, that, again, is kind of a idiosyncratic behavior or a self-stimulatory behavior. You know, that's where the word stimmy comes from. Or the, I don't get, I know other therapists besides you and me say that, so. But it's never a word.
You know, sometimes I think that kids, the same kid can almost get, I think that's part of my hesitation or difficulty with saying, well, why do they do that? Sometimes it seems like kids get some sort of comfort or calming thing from that.
Yeah.
And other times the same kids almost get that buzz, that stimmy part from it. So it just seems like for whatever reason, kids with sensory processing differences seem to get something that's rewarding that encourages them to continue to seek that alternative visual field. You know, they're looking out of the side of their eyes, they're laying on their bellies, rolling things back and forth, and they're really not focused on, I'm watching the choo-choo, it's the, I'm going to lay sideways and look sideways as they go, you know, and sometimes as I watch kids do that, I think, oh, that seems to be very calming to him. Other times, you almost see them get excited with a twinkle in their eye, and then I think, ooh, that's very stimulating to him. So,
right. So it's either, yeah, kind of both sides of that same response,
mm-hmm.
either calming or alerting. And that's
mm-hmm.
what happens so much when we look at kids with those sensory processing differences. And the same kid can have different things that either rev them up or calm them down. So, again, I think this mom needs an OT to help her really sort a lot of that stuff out. The next thing is she says that in circle time, the teacher holds up the first letter to each child's name, and the child has to identify the letter and say the first letter of their name, which is a great, you know, emergent literacy activity to do. But he has apparently no interest in that letter. It doesn't mean anything to him, and so he's not responding. So, again, I would say that's a comprehension issue, a processing issue. That in his little mind, that doesn't make sense yet, so he's not responding with that. But which is interesting to me because it does seem that he kind of rotely memorizes other things. So I bet if mom worked on that with him at home, he would be doing that within a week or two. What do you think?
Probably. I would think
yeah.
so.
And if
but...
that really bugs the mom, she can just work on that and kind of teach him that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm not great, or I don't really want kids to kind of rote learn things. I want them to really understand it. So again, he's not developmentally ready for that yet, so which is kind of interesting because kids who do a lot of the visual stuff that she says he does and other things usually like those things, like letters and numbers, but he's not hyper-focused on that. So, again, I don't really care that a kid can't say, won't say J for Jacob when they're three. That doesn't matter to me.
Right.
Okay, every day they say what day it is and what the weather's like, and each child describes it. Her child only repeats it. Again, he doesn't understand it. Again, same thing we've been saying. It's kind of a processing problem. He's just echolalic in that he repeats what the previous child has said or whatever the teacher has said. He just kind of echoes that without understanding it. And again, we want kids to link meanings and really understand what they're saying, not just spit those words back out verbatim. I'm sorry, between coughing and all this other stuff, I'm just a mess to listen to, so sorry about that today. let's see, it sounds like the other two things under there, that eating healthy and exercising makes us strong, same kind of thing. He's just only echoing the last response. Okay, the next thing with the counting. Kate, you want to take a whirl with that? She says he counts to 20, but he can't count objects yet. When are kids supposed to count objects for real?
I think my assessment tool says they should understand 1 and 2 by 30 months. And so by that, I mean if you have 5 things and you say, get 1 truck, they should be able to demonstrate by getting 1 truck that they understand that. Or give your brother 2 shoes, they should be able to do that. So they can they can indicate, or which hand has one hat, and you have, you know, little hats, four in one hand and one in another, and they should be able to point or say that one, let you know that they understand that's a set of one and that's a set of two. And beyond that, so I don't really know.
That's beyond three, so we don't know those milestones.
Right.
We only see kids till they're three or four, so we don't know that. But that really being able to count is a totally different skill than just being able to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, count all the way up to 20. That's a totally different skill. And we already know that he's great at just hearing something and be able to spit it back out to you. But again, he really lacks that foundational comprehension piece where he doesn't understand that that word one means the same as that quantity, just that one apple, and then two apples, and then three apples. So, again, that underlying processing comprehension problem has really faked them out, because just because a kid can count to 20 doesn't mean that he understands numbers. And you really have to kind of separate, you know, tease out those differences in those skills. And, you know, that's hard for a lot of parents, like we were talking about before. Just because he says it, you automatically give him credit for understanding it. And sometimes therapists are fooled by that, too, or preschool teachers. So you do... our oldest son that I talk about all the time, Jonathan, could really, he had a lot of words that he read as sight words in kindergarten. So when he was diagnosed formally with dyslexia when he was in first grade, his kindergarten teacher was blown away because he was such a good sight reader that he had memorized the little shapes of those words. She totally felt like he was on the track to really read and spell and understand all that, and he really wasn't. So even professionals can get fooled, for lack of a better word, that they're not really looking at those component skills or foundational skills that go into every little milestone that you're supposed to reach.
Yeah, and this, I mean, I see this a lot with kids that we work with under three who they don't really understand one or two or three. One little guy we share right now, Laura, I'm always kind of teasing him, saying, do you want two or three? And he'll always say two, because I think he's been asked if he wants one or two. And I'll show him two cookies or three cookies. And he'll always say, two cookies. I don't think he has a clue which is which, but I'm trying to show him three, take three, this is more. He hasn't really, you know, he knows two is better than one, but he hasn't figured out three is better than two. But that's common, and it really is just a reflection of just like kind of all these other things. You know, it's like, yeah, he's got the words there, but he really hasn't. And, it, you know, it says, looks like the teacher will ask him to count five apples, and he won't. I would suggest he can't. He doesn't really understand the concept. And you want to start with nice low numbers like one and two. And sometimes when those click, they do kind of get that one-to-one correspondence. You know, as you're counting, and I have kids do that a lot too. I'll say, oh, let's count them. I'll have three balls. And they go one, two, three, four. And they're counting the same ball a couple times. I mean,
need to work on that. Yeah, you really do want to help them take their little fingers and touch each one. And then when they're finished, I always try to slap their hands in their laps or say, all done, or something that I know that they understand, so they don't keep going after that.
Keep counting, yeah, because they've learned the succession and they count them up, but they're not really making the association that I'm actually counting these real objects. And to me, that is much more significant, just like kids with ABCs. I wouldn't be surprised if this kid could sing his ABCs all day long, but hasn't necessarily made any association between the letters. And
well, we know he doesn't. But he doesn't know the first letter for his name.
Right.
Okay, the next ones are all that I think were all occupational therapy related or sensory processing related. He gets very excited and will jump around hyper and gets really riled up and throws things. And again, that is kind of a behavior issue, but really some kids, when they're throwing, you know, we always as parents or preschool teachers kind of associate throwing with always being mad or, you know, being bad, but that's not always the case. Sometimes kids are throwing with the biggest grin on their faces, and they are just throwing out of sheer delight. You know, they've gotten a little bit like she said, hyper overstimulated, and they just pick up something and throw it, or just destroy everything that you're trying to play with. And again, they're so excited, they're just so revved up that they are not doing it out of anger or aggressiveness per se. They're just excited, and just again, that doesn't, they're just having fun. And so he doesn't realize that that's a problem. And so sensory seekers are kids who really, you know, do a lot of that movement or lots of jumping, lots of running, you know, maybe throwing, crashing into things. And again, she needs an occupational therapist to kind of explain that to her and look at his little profile and help her find positive ways that he can get that same little feeling in his body and not get in trouble for throwing things at school.
Let's see, you're right. These are all kind of sensory-based. I would say this child would definitely, and this teacher and this mom would all benefit from a good OT to kind of help them troubleshoot a lot of these behaviors, because so many of them are sensory-related. And, you know, it's common for kids who are in a nice little classroom where there's a lot of activity and a lot of noise and a lot of stimulation. They do get really, really kind of overwrought. And then these behaviors come out, and they're really not necessarily being bad. They're just kind of coping to the best of their abilities. But next one, he says, he has no concept of the rules. He'll dump out a bucket of toys and then just walk over them and not even notice.
Yeah.
And again, I'd say, yeah.
And he's just not processing that the teacher has said, no, it's not time to play with the toys right now. We're at the table, or we're whatever, and he might not even be dumping those toys to get a specific toy out. It may just be kind of random that he's dumping, and then, again, that lack of awareness. I have that all the time with children that I'm playing with on the floor, and mom's sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and they do get up to walk across the room, and they step right on my notes that I'm writing, or right on, you know, anything that's lying there. They have no awareness, really, that they need to walk around it. You know, they're just stepping over what's in their path, and I'm sure an OT could explain that much better than we would right here, but certainly they just don't understand that. And that's what she's saying. It looks like he has no concept of the rules. You know, he doesn't realize that he's stepping all over toys or whatever. He's just wanted to do the dump thing and then move on.
And on the sensory note, I mean, to me, this little guy sounds like a lot of the kids that I've worked with over the years who have sensory issues. They get kind of hyper-focused on one sense. So he's, say this is really visual or maybe really auditory. Maybe he really likes the noise of when those toys smash to the ground, but then he's kind of bopping around the room and really isn't responding to different stimuli to his various senses. So maybe he's really distracted by the auditory feedback he's getting. Maybe he's really distracted by the visual feedback he's getting. But kids who are either on the spectrum or have significant sensory issues seem to be that way quite a bit to me, where they get really, really engaged with one of their senses, and they really, not by choice, but just kind of by the way their makeup is, they focus in on one thing and they disregard other things, you know. So
right,
they
so
may not
to get to something else and not even notice.
The answer is, I would guess he really doesn't notice, even though he just dumped him. You know,
right,
because
something else caught his attention and he's moved on.
Right. And it's not that they don't hear and they don't see and they do, but they don't necessarily do them all at once the way that typically developing kids do, or not as well as typically developing kids. And so they look like, well, does he not hear? Does he not see? Does he not feel that? And at that moment, I would say the answer is no, not very well, because he's overly engaged in some other sensory feedback that he's getting, and he doesn't really respond to all the stimuli he's getting at once very well. So, and those kids are those kinds of kids who lay on the floor and roll back and forth or look out the side of their eyes, and, you know, because he's obviously a visual kid doing that eye stuff out the side, you know. So, anyway.
So they open and close the cabinet door and look at the hinge, or look at the sunlight, have the sunlight coming in the window and reflecting under the cabinet or through the curtains, you know. And it's not that they're, really paying attention to what's going on, or kids that like books, the parent will tell you, oh, my gosh, he likes books. And then you'll see what a kid does and what he's doing. Is he's flipping those pages, flip. You know, and he's not looking at those pictures.
Mm-mm-mm.
He's watching those pages go by really, really quickly. You know, so again, it's
the same kids oftentimes that the moms who will say that. And we are not knocking moms. We've been there. We've done that. It's easy to kind of misinterpret that. But a lot of times those same kids and moms say, oh, he loves books. And I always kind of, you know, feel him out a little bit on that and say, oh, will he let you read it to him? Or can you sit and point to pictures and talk about it with him? And a lot of times those same moms say, oh, no, he gets really mad and he grabs it away from me and runs, you know, because they really are getting a visual kickback somehow by turning those pages rapidly, and they really don't care what pictures are on there, you know, at least early on when they really haven't learned to attend to the pictures, or they're not meaningful enough to them, and what they like is the pages, you know, turning those pages. So if you want to test that, stop and try and point to some pictures in the book. And if he gets mad and rips the book out of your hand, then that's not loving the book. That's liking something about the book. But anyway, I digress.
That's okay. That's what this whole show is about. The last thing she says, he can only scribble. They're learning to write letters, and he still can't even draw a straight line or a circle. And that's the thing about some preschool teachers, too. If they don't really understand the progression of development, that, you know, just because he's 3 1/2 and just because he can hold a pencil doesn't necessarily mean that he's ready to write. I think it's a little early to stress writing at 3 1/2. I know that... Excuse me, so many speech pathologists are really, there's so much about emerging literacy in the field, and people are really feeling like we should be introducing these pre-reading and pre-writing activities, and that's going to somehow limit the number of children who have so much difficulty with that as school-age children. But I think if a child is still struggling to communicate and still struggling to understand language, that you're way too premature to introduce those kinds of things when they lack those basic milestones out of that. But she's saying, you know, that he can't imitate the straight line or the circle yet, and that's on the test, Kate, by when? 2 1/2, 3, that you're able to copy those shapes?
Not even. I think it's like 24, I don't know if it's 20 straight, 24, or maybe 24 to 27. It's not very old.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so if you have a kid at 3 1/2 that's still not doing that, boy, you need an OT, and I'm kind of surprised that the speech pathologist that saw him before didn't really pick up on that. But in her defense, she's looking at communication and not a full 5-area assessment. So maybe, you know, maybe he was scribbling when he was supposed to scribble, but never kind of got to the straight line or circle part. So, again, I hope that the mom has taken my advice and gotten an OT assessment, and because it looks like an occupational therapist would have lots to address with this little guy, just from the sensory processing perspective, plus this fine motor stuff, and that can really get him ready for all those pre-writing activities that he needs to be doing in preschool, so that in kindergarten and first grade that he's really ready to do the things that he's supposed to do. It also sounds like he has an attention problem, because she said it's very hard to get him to stay engaged in projects, but she has to stay next to him and keep encouraging him. And the same thing goes at home. And that's probably true. He probably is a sensory seeker. He'd much rather run around a room than sit and do something like, you know, copy a line or a circle or a letter, and especially when he's not very good at it.
Right. So that's what I was thinking is, yeah, not only is it difficult for him to sit and focus on these things, they're not particularly meaningful. And if you can't do the circle or the straight line and somebody's trying to make you make the letter S, you know, that's a little,
you know,
like...
Thinking, you've already told me I'm terrible at it, because you keep trying to make me do it again, and I never, you know, I'm not hearing yay and good and all those nice things, and, you know, obviously this is something that I'm horrible at, so let me get out of here as quick as I can and go on and do something else. So, you know, there could be a couple of different ways to look at that. It's probably all of the above, with him.
Right.
You know, it's hard for him. He doesn't want to stay in David, and then he has much more fun when he's doing these other things, and they're more meaningful. And, you know, because of the processing problems, language-wise, he might not even really get that the teacher's saying, we have to try again on that one, you know, because that doesn't, that kind of abstract thing doesn't really make sense. He might not even understand, you know, that his attempts aren't given up yet because of the language he's using. And at the same time, she can't really say, no, more, write more, you know, and bring it down to a point where he really could understand it. So there could be lots of different things going on there.
That sounds like
but
the teacher does a good job of trying to stay with them, and you know, and
yeah,
that's,
he does. And I think he would be a difficult kid to have in a classroom of children because it does sound like, you know, he's having trouble at really specific times of the day, which you know, so it probably is hard for her as a teacher who probably has 10 or 15 kids in that one class to give him the one-on-one because, you know, she has the other kids who need the other stuff, so that's why the mom really needs some additional help with therapy. But she sounds like a great mom, and I'm so glad that she wrote us this letter and gave us an opportunity to talk about these things. And I think she's on the right track because she's already tried twice to get speech assessments, and she's having conferences with the teacher, and she's certainly aware. This same mom also sent me a couple of comments on the website that he was having difficulty potty training. And so she said that he'll go to the bathroom when they take him, but he doesn't initiate saying, you know, I have to go pee-pee or I have to go potty or whatever their word is. And so my advice to her was, because he's so repetitive, for her to really say, you know, I want to go potty, I want to go potty, I want to go potty, as she's taking him to the potty, so that he links that phrase, links that meaning with, you know, feeling that little full bladder, and then with what, you know, happens once he gets to the potty. So that was my advice with that. So there are other issues that she's looking at with him too, just readiness issues. So certainly the developmental pediatrician will be able to tease out the specific things that he has going on, maybe get a diagnosis or maybe not, and then more importantly, get her the services that he needs to help those things be a little easier, not only at school but at home too.
Certainly does sound like, from what she shared on this, that he would be a candidate for some occupational therapy and for some speech therapy because, you know, the receptive language seems to be an issue, and then his sensory-seeking kind of differences are, you know, really kind of making it difficult for him to be in the little classroom environment. But and also, you know, it sounds like this mom has certainly done her homework and has thought about it a lot, but I think sometimes moms are intimidated by therapists, and you know what? We're human. I don't mind it at all when a mom tells me, well, he can't do that, or, you know, he can count to 10, but he doesn't really understand what one or two means, or, you know, I don't mind it when parents point things out to me. I think, okay, thanks for the heads up, because who knows, I might have been a little distracted that day myself, and I would have missed it. So now that she knows. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Okay. No, you go ahead, cause then I'll finish.
Well, I was just going to say that now that she knows and she's identified these things herself, you know, let the therapist do her thing, but don't hesitate to say, you know, these are things that I've identified at home and the preschool teacher has talked to me about. And by all means, I always encourage parents, whether it be with me or with a therapist as they transition into the school system, to go ahead and give them a heads up, because they could miss it. And, you know, if you know it's an issue, and it's true, as kids get older, Laura and I are always going on about how we up the ante or we raise the standard on them. And, you know, what we expected for typical development is 2 looks very different from what we expect at 3. And now this little guy's 3.5, and the questions and the related appropriate information is getting more difficult. So, you know, it's going to be more obvious as he gets older if he doesn't get some help and start to fill in those gaps that he isn't really understanding. But, you know, she's a mom who's done her work, so don't be afraid to share what you already kind of know about your little boy, because we don't mind that, or I know I don't.
Oh, I certainly don't. And I love it. I'll say to a parent, like in an avow, I'll say, no, he's not really following the directions for me today. Do you think this is related to, and I love the parents that just pipe in and say, well, that's because he doesn't understand them, you know, or you
yeah.
know, and they just flat out put it out there. I'll say, he didn't really point to pictures, you know, when we were doing the test, and they'll say, he's never pointed to a picture in his life.
Mm-hmm.
You even got him to sit there that long. So we love that. Or if a parent, you know, if I'll say, gosh, he's really quiet, he doesn't seem to have any words, and they'll say, oh, no, these are the words, you know, that he uses routinely. So I love it when a parent gives me information that even seems to be contradictory to what I'm saying. And I think that's a point to begin a discussion. I don't take that as that they've usurped my authority or, you know, anything like that. You know, I take that as a starting point for a conversation that this is what we need to talk about. And parents really know their kids much better than any you know, first session that we're ever going to be able to know with a kid, you know, about providing information. So chime right in there and speak up and tell them, you know, point blank what you're concerned about and, you know, what the concerns are so that they can address that with you and let you know whether your expectations are too high or too low or whether that's not an age-appropriate skill or, you know, anything in between. They should be able to explain that to you. And I think it's, when parents tell me that a therapist has gotten mad about those kinds of questions, you know, I always feel bad that they didn't, that the therapist wasn't able to just kind of step up and, again, take it as the beginning of a conversation rather than, you know, that a parent's arguing with them or something. So.
Right. And sometimes parents will express a concern about something that really is developmentally above where the child is chronologically, and so it's like, well, we're not concerned that your two-year-old can't do something that a two-and-a-half-year-old is supposed to do, but in that case, we just simply explain, well, he's really too young for that. He's not really supposed to know that yet, but conversely, when they tell us any other information that they're concerned about or somebody else has noticed, more power to them, because we're human. We can miss it, just like it gets missed all the time. So I hope this mom, and I think she will, because she's obviously thought a lot about it and done her homework and talked to the preschool teacher, and, you know, she's aware of it and she's addressing it. So, but don't be intimidated by that developmental pediatrician. He or she is human. They won't mind if you share what you know with them.
That's right. That's right. That's good advice for all of us parents. Okay, thanks for listening today, and we'll be back with you next week.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.